come back down and crash into the ocean, and that's the end of them. SpaceX has been trying to recover those things because each one goes for about $6 million. So the goal is to try to eventually catch these things down. Each one has its own thrusters on board, it, you know, gas thrusters. It also has its own parasail that pops out, and it's got GPS on it, and it tries to guide itself to a certain location. The WS2N. Well, bearings are going to come down 2 parts, but now they'd be happy just to, you know, catch a half of a bearing, eventually 2 halves. They've tried in the past, and they've missed. What they have is a ship, big ship. This one's called Mr. Stevens. Big, I don't know, it's got to be a 300-foot ship. It's got these big, gigantic outriggers sticking out from it, and this massive net. And they tried a net that used to cover about the size of the ship in the past. And so far, they haven't been able to catch it. It's bearing lands just a little too far away from the boat. But because they're getting better with parasails, and they have a chance, they want to putting a bigger net on this thing. This net looks like it's the size of a, you know, it looks like it's almost the size of a football field. It's a very large net. It's not that half the size, but it's a big, huge net, and they plan on catching it, and if they do, they'll be able to bring it back and actually refurbish that thing. Send it back up. That would be the first time ever. Ones that land in the water, once they get the water in them, in a bearing, they're really no good. So that's why they have to catch it before it hits the water. Okay, and then before I go on to any other space topic, there is one other mission that's happening this week. It's Friday. It's coming Friday. A flight from China. China is launching something called the Chang 4. They've launched, you know, Chang 3 before. This is Chang 4. And what it is, it's a lunar mission. Chang 3 is back 5 years ago. Chang 3 landed on the moon, and it had a rover on board, and it was, you know, the near side of the moon. It was a big success for China. This one is kind of a duplication of that. The only difference with Chang 4 and Chang 3 is they plan on landing this thing on the far side of the moon. Nobody's ever soft landed anything on the far side of the moon yet, you know, with a rover. Ready to go. But interesting on how they did this, they set themselves up. This mission was preceded by another flight that went up, I guess, I don't know, about 6 or 8 months ago, and sent something up. It's got this long, complicated spelling on how to pronounce this thing. I found out it's called Qichao. Qichao is the name of the satellite, and essentially it's a repeater in the sky, and it's set behind the moon at the L2 position, just sitting out there. In what they call a halo orbit. It's not really going around the moon. Just following the moon around the Earth as it goes. So it stays there all the time. Therefore, it's able to see the dark side of the moon the whole time. So when Chang 4 finally gets there, which is going to launch on Friday, they expect it to get there at maybe the end of the month or maybe early January. They plan on deorbiting it and eventually landing on the moon. What they're going to need the help of is their repeater system that they put up there about 6 or 8 months ago. And it's going to actually land autonomously when it gets near the surface. They have it all set up for that. And then release the rover. The rover and the lander will communicate with each other on UHF. The transmissions from the lander up to the repeater in the sky, actually Qichao, the English name is really a bridge, so it's really a radio bridge. They'll be using, will be all X-Men. So that's how they're going to do that. And they'll transmit back to the Earth. They don't use the deep space network here. They're not allowed. they're not part of that system. European Space Agency uses it. We use it, but not China. They have their own setup signals from the moon. So that last part of the information about the radios, the X-Men, UHF, I got that information from the IEEE pamphlet that comes out called Spectrum. Dick, I know you know what that is. The IEEE has a whole lot of information. And if anybody wants that website, let me know. It's a very long website, so I shortened it. Tiny URL, so no big deal to bring that up. You get a lot of information about that. Not on a lot of websites, I'll tell you that. Information about this China launch. This is WS2N. Okay, with that, does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these? There are like five events that are really coming up. The launch of Expedition 58 to the space station from Russia. The OSIRIS-REx mission to Bennu for the flight of the 64 satellites from California, or the launch of the cargo vehicle from Florida, which Harry will be able to see on Tuesday. Or the Chang 4 mission by China, before I go on to any other business. This is WS2N. Okay, very good. SpaceX company is naturally very big on launching all these different rockets for different companies, for different countries, and eventually people launching their first uncrewed vehicle, but you know, it's going to be a crewed vehicle. The first test up to the space station very shortly, January 7th. It'll dock with the space station and eventually come back. Then, eventually, some months from now, they'll send the crew up probably in June. Well, SpaceX has bigger plans than just a crew up to the International Space Station every now and then. They plan on eventually sending people from here to the moon, or here to Mars, or even from this one side of the planet to another part of the planet. They plan on using their rocks that they're developing, that they've now given a name to it. It's called the Starship. Starship will be eventually launched from something called the Super Heavy Launch Vehicle. Super Heavy Launch Vehicle will make Falcon 9 look like a toy. It's going to be a very large booster, and so is the Starship. Starship is essentially the second stage of a rocket converted into a super spacecraft, probably with eventually 40 different seats probably on it. Well, he wants to test this. When I say he, I mean Elon Musk eventually wants to test Starship out. That's the new name, by the way. He had another name. We talked about that about a week or two ago. He was calling it the Big Falcon.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I mean, this Starship down in Texas. You know, he has a massive complex in Texas, McGregor, Texas, that he's been using for many, many years, testing different rockets out, different engines. But he needs a bigger place, and eventually a brand new launch complex besides California or besides Cape Canaveral. And he's building this launch complex down in Boca Chica, Texas, which is right near the border of Mexico. Actually, very close to Brownsville, Texas. You know where that is. So he plans on launching these starships vertically without the super heavy booster in the beginning. Wants to be able to test these things, launch vertically, go up maybe 500 meters, fly around a little bit, and then come back down and land on the tail. Similar to what he does with all these Falcon 9 rockets. Vertical takeoff, vertical landing. VTVL, they call it. And he plans on doing this as early as the end of 2019. So this thing is pretty much in development. So that should be pretty exciting if he gets the Starship on, you know, being able to take off and land. He'll start off with a very low altitude, 500 meters, go up, you know, for 2 minutes or so, and then, you know, land. Plans on increasing that distance to eventually 5,000 meters. So, he'll send it up a couple of miles and come back and land. That should take roughly about 6 minutes. So, that's the story with the Starship under development. Plans on having a use for the Starship, and then eventually sending it to the moon with people, sending it to Mars, and even sending it from, let's say, this side of the Earth to the other side of the Earth. He thinks if he has, you know, he can bring the course down enough, won't have a problem. It's a different fuel than what a lot of these rockets use, like the Falcon 9 uses kerosene and liquid oxygen. So switching over to liquid methane with this thing, liquid methane, liquid oxygen, got some advantages. Falcon 9, he needs to have helium tanks as the fuel runs out of the oxygen runs out of the tanks as the rocket is, you know, flying. He supplements that space with helium. He's got the extremely high pressure, that 6,000 pound pressure tanks, and half a dozen inside the Falcon 9, which, you know, fills that void. Then have that, you start to create a vacuum in there, and eventually the outer shell might even collapse. So you need the helium. Talking about helium earlier, that was part of his problem. The helium actually gets through some of these tanks that he puts on. So he has to have, you know, to slow that process from happening. He has very strong carbon-made type of tanks that hold the helium and wrapped with some kind of wrapping. And at one point, he created a void in there a couple of years ago and created an explosion. Void, the tank moved a little bit. There was an ignition that happened, and this was in the oxygen part of the vehicle. The whole thing blew up, and he wound up taking out Launch Complex 40, which now has been rebuilt. Wiped out the whole rocket, wiped out the couple hundred million dollar satellite that was sitting on top, and wiped out the whole Launch Complex 40. So, you won't have to worry about the helium, because with liquid methane, you don't have that problem. Methane itself will actually become a gas, filling in the void that the helium would normally take. That would be the job of the helium, with methane, with the gaseous part of it, would take the place of that helium. Any questions or comments? This is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet. Okay, very good. Another thing that's been going on is these small rockets that have been taken off. Recently we had a company called Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab was launched a couple of successful rockets called the Electron Rocket. Now we have these other companies that are about to do the same thing. Virgin Orbit is part of Virgin Galactic. Virgin Orbit is owned by Richard Branson, and he's launching Launcher One. Launcher One is a rocket that he has developed. He's attaching it to the 747, the wing of the 747, is going to be dropping it. He's flown the thing without dropping it. Tested it, I think within about a month or so, he should be able to bring it up and just drop it and see how it does. Probably land it in the water for now, and then eventually he'll be able to drop it and launch it to orbit. Launcher 1 will be able to put in into orbit all these different small satellites. When I say small, maybe, you know, 1,000 pounds or so. Another company is called Vector. One right after the other. Vector has launched a couple of suborbital flights in the Mojave Desert. They think this will be their year to eventually get their rocket into orbit. So it's called Vector R. A couple of other companies. This is a company called Firefly. That just started a couple of years ago. They've already launched a couple of suborbital flights, I think, from New Mexico. Spaceport America. They've had a couple of flights. Not orbital, but I think they're getting close to it. They're probably also going to launch from Alaska. Wait, I think that's Vector might launch from Alaska. Firefly is going to launch from Vandenberg, California, go over Launch Complex 2. So they'll be able to launch some small satellites. You know, probably weighing 500 to 1,000 pounds, a couple hundred kilograms. They also plan on having like a third stage on their rocket with SEP propulsion. SEP is solar electric propulsion to push their satellites eventually to the moon if they want. The Firefly has some big ideas. And that's the story on that. Any other comments or questions? This is WS20. Okay, I really don't have much left. The Origin, if you know about that company, that's owned by Jeff Bezos, the same company that owns Amazon. Blue Origin is eventually going to be launching a rocket. They're building one down in Florida. It's going to be, looks like almost the size of a Saturn V rocket, you know, the same ones that we launched to the moon. Not quite that big, but getting close to it. And similar to the spaceship rocket with the super heavy booster, this one is going to have the same fuel, liquid methane, liquid oxygen. Calls this one the New Glenn. The New Glenn is going to be reusable just like the Falcon 9 and eventually Starship. So Blue Origin is ordered itself a ship, and this thing is probably about, I don't know, it looks like it's about 500 feet long. I have a picture of it. And it's got a landing pad, and it kind of looks like ones that SpaceX has, except a lot bigger. SpaceX has these autonomous drones that go out there and float in one spot, and the rocket comes down flying out from out of space and lands vertically on that boat. Origin's going to do it one step better. Instead of having all these four different engines that are in each corner of this drone that SpaceX has to keep everything balanced and just right, this one's going to be moving along at sea, you know, a couple of knots, 10 knots or so, in one direction. So when the booster comes flying down from outer space, the New Glenn booster that Blue Origin is developing is going to come down and land on a moving ship. So that's pretty interesting. It's not going to be going fast, but I think by having it moving, cutting through the water waves won't bother it, and it'll actually keep it more stable as it's moving through the ocean. They don't have plans on bringing New Glenn eventually back to land in Cape Canaveral like SpaceX does. All their landings will be on this ship. So that's pretty interesting. Let's see if there's any comments or questions. This is WS20. Okay, that's about all I have. And if you want to pick it up or Roy has a couple of things he wants to cover that he didn't cover. Nobody has any questions, so we'll just turn it back to Dick. K2RIW, this is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
Does anybody have any questions for Paul? If not, we'll either send Paul to another subject or put Roy on for another subject. See if anyone's got any questions for Roy at this time on space. Are there any other subjects you'd like to cover tonight, Roy, before we go over to, Paul. Paul, do you have any other subjects you'd like to cover tonight, or do you want to quit at this point?
Oh, I went through my list. If anybody had any questions, we could always answer them, but now that's the main topic. I just hope that launch tomorrow gets off okay, gets up to the space station. But with that crew of three, one American girl. And it's going to be interesting. On the space station, you'll have two American women on board the space station. No American men from our country. And then you'll have one fella that's going up with them from Canada. You'll have Alexander Gerst. He's from Germany. He's up there now. And you'll have two Russians. So pretty cool. Back to you, sir.
Okay, I guess we'll go back to Roy. Roy had a pretty big list. He only used a small portion of it. See if Roy can give us another one that we give lots of participation. AC2GS, K2LIW, go right ahead, Roy.
Okay, very good, Dick. This one's lighthearted. It probably won't lead to a lot of conversation, but it's 20 minutes to the hour anyway, so let it rip. We spoke about the bright idea a while ago about peeling off the space-based function of the Air Force into a shiny new branch of the military. They were going to call it the Space Force. Perhaps an idea more suitable for the sale of cheap T-shirts and coffee cups rather than anything else, perhaps? Pentagon leaders were dutifully double-timing towards a new military branch, and then apparently they got new marching orders. For months, Pentagon officials have been rushing to prepare plans for an independent space force, a sixth branch of the military ordered up by the president. But since October 26th, they have been marching to a new White House order. Go back and look at different ways to reorganize the military space operations. One of the four options is an old one. Defense officials said a space corps that would be part of the Air Force, the way the Marine Corps is part of the Department of the Navy. The proposed structure is similar to a bipartisan proposal that was passed in the House, but failed in the Senate last year. Why second thoughts? The officials who spoke on condition of anonymity suggested that some in the Trump administration feared that the proposed independent space force might not make it through Congress. Let me drop for a sec. A former senior defense official said Pentagon officials would be more comfortable with a space corps within the Air Force, but feel that Trump's comments that he wanted a separate but equal space force have given them little wiggle room to deal in. The four options, according to one of the officials, include 1, an Air Force-owned space corps that includes only Air Force assets, 2, Air Force-owned space corps that also takes space-related troops and assets from the Army and the Navy, 3, an independent service that takes from the Air Force, the Army, and the Navy, and 4, an independent service that takes from the three services plus parts of the intelligence community. As part of an ongoing review, the department is developing options for a space force as a 6th military service branch to implement the president's vision and guidance. Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Puccino, a Defense Department spokesman, said in an email. A White House spokesman declined to comment. Let me drop for a second. No matter which option is chosen, the new organization is likely to be called Space Force, according to an October 26th White House memo to the Pentagon. The memo is from Scott Pace, who is the National Space Council's Executive Secretary, and Earl Matthews, who directs defense policy and strategy at the National Security Council. And it asks the Pentagon for alternate recommendations. As we work to meet the president's intent of establishing a separate but distinct branch of the armed forces for space, we request Department of Defense provide analysis and recommendations to the President on the optimal organizational construct to meet this intent, they wrote. Let me drop for a second. The memo asked the Pentagon to decide whether it would be best served by the establishment of a new independent military department or whether the new Space Force would be most effectively organized as a separate service within the Department of the Air Force. The latter option would likely mimic the Marine Corps' relationship to the Navy. The Marines are run by a four-star general overseen by the civilian Navy secretary. Four times in the two-page memo, Pace and Matthews stress that the Pentagon's recommendations should meet the President's intent of establishing a Space Force. The term Space Corps is not used in this memo. The memo was sent 4 days after Defense One published details from a draft of the Pentagon's proposal to the Congress. That draft proposed an independent service that would draw assets from the three spacefaring services, but not the National Reconnaissance Office or other parts of the intelligence community. Let me drop for a second. We're trying to produce what the President wants, which is a Space Force capability, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis told reporters at the Pentagon on November 21st. Mattis also downplayed the price tag associated with the new force, which remains a live argument in a Pentagon that President Trump may have told to cut spending. For one thing, it's simply a shifting of costs, Mattis said. It's not an increase, so we're trying to get clarity to you on that one. Todd Harrison, a defense budget analyst with the Center of Strategic International Studies, said a space would cost taxpayers an extra $300 to $550 million each year. That's because billions of dollars would be moved from the Air Force, Navy, and Army budgets into the new service. So it would seem that all this may just end up as an example of rebranding an old thing new again and unloading some cheap T-shirts to the marks, probably made in China. Let me drop for any questions or comments. This is AC2GS.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, everybody thinks that NASA has this tremendous budget, which, you know, they have a good-sized budget. But the space portion of the military is like three times of what NASA is. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of money, tremendous amount of contracts and people involved. With all the things that are happening, I don't think... you know, who's ever in charge wants to give up the reins of whatever they're doing and then consolidate into one another group. So I think it's going to pretty much stay, as far as launches are concerned, under the control of the Air Force. I really don't see this ever happening. But you never know. The amount of money that's involved is just tremendous. NASA, you know, we have now about 40 flights per year, just from NASA. A good percentage of them is from National Reconnaissance Office and places like that, and they're all part of the military.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. I think a lot of people don't realize the military presence that we have in space programs and such because it's not heavily advertised. It's on the QT. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I think this is going to go the same way as those military parades that were considered to be a great idea at one time. I think this will just fade away and all we'll have are graying old T-shirts that say Space Force, rather garish icon covering them. You know, what can you do? It made the news. It sounds kind of amusing. These are not terribly amusing days, so I grab for anything that has humor content.
Yeah, I agree. And, I thought it was funny when I first heard it, too, but it's actually gone further down the chain of events than I thought it was going to go. I thought it was going to stop after day one. But, they are still talking about it. The only guy that would really be happy if this happens is the guy that's up to, you know, most likely to run the Space Force is Mike Griffin, who at one time used to be NASA administrator, and he happens to be a ham radio operator, and he still has his license. It's an end call, I forget what it is. He would be thrilled. He would be the most likely guy that would run it, because he knows so much about the space program and launching these things. And they say that his name is at the top of the list.
Well, Paul, it would be nice if they choose someone like that. Lately, they've been going to a different source for their people who don't necessarily know much of the subject that they're supposed to be dealing with. So it would be a nice change of pace to have a guy with that much experience in the field. But somehow I think they would tend to screw it up. I don't know why, but I just get that sense.
They've been doing fine the way it is. It's going to wind up somehow costing us more money if they try to make this kind of change. You would need like a population on the moon or Mars, or, you know, a massive amount of people flying in space. I don't even know if you need a space force. You know, you don't need them to protect us. I did hear the idea of, you know, they're worried about people shooting satellites down. Maybe that might be a problem, you know, knock out our communication capability. But that's why they want all these dozens, if not thousands, of satellites that they can launch into space. The military wants this too. They're working on their own version of DARPA. And the idea is to have all these communication satellites on standby. So if some country knocks one of ours out of the box, they could have one up the next day. And I'm not kidding. They want the capability of launching on a daily basis if they had to.
Well, that's great. I hope they go along with it and continue it and develop rocketry again like the good old days. I think really we have just about everything built in them already, personally. Again, I tend to think of this as more of a rebranding problem. Is an administrative shift. I think the powers that be would be more than happy if they just reprint some of the stationery to have it listed slightly different and do the same exact thing that we're doing right now.
I agree. Very good. All right, come on, go on to something else. I remember looking down your list. I don't know if you ever got to some of the things you wanted to get to. What was that thing about some kind of a chemical for your knees or something? That sounded good. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, we take requests. Let me just find it, and I will go off on the knee thing.
I think it's called a hydro... I don't know. It was hydrogel. I don't know. I read it. But, whatever, it's supposed to help people with problems.
I've got an additional question now, Roy. When it comes to the active armed services, we've got Air Force, Army, and Navy. And apparently the Marines are really a subset of the Navy. Is the Coast Guard all by itself, or is the Coast Guard really a portion of something else? Over to you, Roy, KQIW.
That's a very interesting question, which unfortunately I don't have the answer. You would think that since it's water-based, it should be a sub-branch of the Navy, more so than even the Marine Corps. But they might be a separate branch. I unfortunately don't have the answer to that one.
Yeah, they're separate for us. They're definitely separate.
They come. 30 now.
WB2EV.
WB2EV6.
I wish I could say I'm 100% sure, but I believe they are part or were part of the Treasury.
Okay, that makes as much sense as anything in the federal government. I pretty much think it's not a military operation, so I don't think the Navy is involved. It's a separate, more of a legal kind of establishment and safety establishment than a defense and warfare establishment. At least that's the way I understood it.
KC, want to Sam?
Yes, Sam.
They come under Homeland Security. phone these days.
Okay, that makes sense. Do you know offhand who ran it before Homeland Security became a thing?
I'm trying to think. Someone said Treasury. It might have been Treasury. It wasn't military. It was always, basically military in a way, but it wasn't under the Army or the Navy or whatever. But it's Homeland Security now. I'm not sure what it was before.
Okay, so that makes a lot more sense that it's under Homeland Security. So you got your answer, Dick.
Is the Coast Guard an armed service? Do they carry weapons?
Do.
Yes.
Has it always been an armed service, even 40 years ago?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Barry.
Yeah, I just looked it up, you know, I had to look it up on the internet, and it was once Treasury. It has always been armed and is one of the seven uniformed military service. It can be put under the control of the U.S. Navy, but now it is Homeland Security.
Okay, very good, Barry. Yeah, I pulled up Wikipedia, and it's an armed, it's a branch of the United States Armed Forces, separate. It's, as you mentioned, it's Homeland Security, but in times of peacetime, it's that, but in times of not quite peacetime, it can be transferred directly to the Navy. So it sort of actually makes sense for a change.
Roger, and it says that in 1915, it was established under the U.S. Department of the Treasury.
Okay, but it was actually initially created back in 1790 by the Congress.
As the Revenue Marine.
They had their own rebranding.
It was a funny discussion on...
You. I like to try and keep it light sometimes. There's only so many times you can talk about neutrinos and black holes, so I like to kind of back around and have it light be once a while, you know?
Absolutely, I agree. WB2EVC. I'm going to be listening. Is anybody listening? Mike on.
Paul, you earlier mentioned that there are a number of satellites that are vital to space communication, satellite forward, over the horizon like communication for military purposes. And you mentioned that if some of those got shot out of the sky, they could be replaced immediately. Where would those replacements be shot from? Are they sitting in a warehouse ready to roll? WS2N, K2IW?
Oh, they might have them now. I don't know, but that's their plan. They want these things ready to roll. DARPA had a competition. I believe that Northrop Grumman won. They're going to develop a, looks like a space plane type of thing, where they're going to be able to put it on a vertical launch and launch the satellite straight up from Florida. You know, put it into orbit. Satellite itself will be sitting on top of the plane. It looks like it's attached to the top of it. It will separate from the plane, and then that part will go into orbit. That will be your satellite, and then that plane will come back and land. They want the capability of having the same plane. They're going to have more than one, of course, to launch 10 times a day. That's the capability that they're looking for. And Northrop Grumman is involved in that right now.
So I think you're saying this is under development. This is a plan where the operational hardware doesn't yet exist, but it's coming down the pike. Is that what you're saying, Paul?
Yes, and the military knows that the capability of the electronics has shrunk, even for them. And they'll be able to replace anything that gets shot down, you know. Or even if it doesn't get shot down, if there's an accident, you know, it's happened before where these satellites will crash into one another. You know, it's a couple of times. It doesn't happen every day, that's for sure. But say it does. They want that capability. It might be a military communication. communications satellite that they need back up there. They want it back up now.
Is this going to be another Earth-based Mako small cube satellite thing that goes in orbit around the Earth to serve that communication function?
Many satellites. I think they're in a go by kilograms. It would be like 1,500 to 1,000 pound group that size. And they'll be able to put it into geosynchronous orbit if they have to. With this, I'm trying to remember the name of the launcher that's calling it. I think it's called Space Plane or something. I don't know. I'm fine.
Okay, we'll hear from more from you on more about that next week. Back to you, Roy.
Well, basically, my clock says 11:59, and I don't have a spiel that's 1 minute long, so I'll just take this opportunity to remind everyone that I will post the links to everything that I mentioned, including that wonderful story about the Space Force, and that will be on roy.ac2gs.com. And again, if you got any questions, if there are topics you would like me to cover, I take topics. mailbag@ac2gs.com is my email address, or you can look me up in QRZ. Anything that sounds good, I'll go with. So this is AC2GS, and once again, I'd like to thank Dick and thank Paul for the wonderful opportunity to be here and do this.
Is the W2VN.
Well done, Roy and Paul. Thank you, you all. Bye-bye. We'll see you next week. KQRIW.
Have a good night. And if you can't remember Roy's email, you can always, if you have a space question, you can send it to spacenetreport@gmail.com. 73, guys, next week.
N4HBM to K2RIW.
N4HBM, the former resident of I think it was Massapequa, or I think it was Massapequa where you used to live.
I guess I must have dropped out. but yeah, went from Massapequa, got married, then went upstate for a while with a business up there, sold the business and in 2012. And decided to retire and move down to Florida.
Yeah, when I go to QRZ.com and look at your place in Titusville, it looks like you're living in a warehouse, but I know that's not true. How about you, sir?
Yeah, on QRZ, that's my mailing address. I'm actually in a place called Fox Lake Manor, which is actually just as you head east on South Street, there's a development that's going to be over towards the left-hand side of the road on South Street. It's called Willis Drive. This is the drive that turns off, and I'm on Doyle Drive, the first street you hit, and you go all the way down to the end of Doyle Drive, and I'm on a corner house. And what's nice there, you'd love it. I have a tower to put up. It's going to be put up shortly. But I do not need a permit to put up a tower.
Harry, how come you don't need a permit? Is your piece of property that big that they say it couldn't possibly fall off your property? Go ahead.
Apparently, hams have an exemption here in Titusville. Ham radio service, I know the club that I belong to, the Titusville Amateur Radio Club, and in my own development here, there's eight ham radio operators, but the club and all the hams here in Brevard County managed to, come to the town meeting or whatever it was, years ago, and they got them to give ham radio operators an exemption.
12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the WQVL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, WQVL repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Tonight at 8:30, WQVL repeater system. Tonight at 8:30, welcome to the WQVL repeater. Morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Thank you.
82JRS. KD2JRN, KD2JRN, monitoring.
Tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater.
Because it's Monday, but other than that, the weather, temperature, doesn't bother me at all. It's fantastic for December.
We did the big Christmas tree lighting thing on Saturday evening. We have a 60-foot pine tree in the churchyard and had a big party and lit it all up. It was really nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I haven't been to one of them in many years. When my daughter was little, we'd take her to Brookhaven Town, like the Ecology Center, had a big tree that did light up, and, you know, everything changes with time, but we're definitely behind these days.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. We had some music, some games for the kids, you know, soup and food and lots of stuff. Probably about 500 or 600 people there. It was really nice.
That's fantastic. Sounds like a nice time. Yeah, and, you know, you do it all for the kids, and it makes it special.
What's on tap for you today, Charlie? You going to do any shooting?
Well, hopefully not. I'm working today. no federal holiday for us guys. And I have to cover somebody else's territory, so I've been on the road an hour already of meadow.
What's your line of work?
Oh, copiers and printers. Field service.
No shortage of demand for you.
Well, not at all. I remember years ago they were all worried it was going to go paperless. That has never seemed to happen. As a matter of fact, with the number of copier companies and printers being produced, it's mind-boggling.
In college, they were trying to sell us on the computer revolution. They said it would create a 3 or 4 day work week and eliminate paper. And I find that now all they've done is increase their demand for our productivity and endless revisions because they're so easy to do.
Yeah, it's never ending. You know, computers always being updated, upgraded, always some kind of new issue with, you know, software compatibility and firmware, and it goes on and on.
I went to Apple for my laptop recently. I got a MacBook Air about a year ago. And I find that it integrates so much easier with everything. There's more, you're more limited on software choices, but you can get the bulk of what you want to do. But the integration of it, its interoperability is fantastic. You don't have to do anything. It knows what to do to make connections. It's pretty neat.
Oh, it definitely beats the old days of the 286 systems when you had to manually configure everything. Yeah, I remember they were talking about them being like appliances.
Well, they certainly are now. Everything we have runs on a computer, and you carry one in your pocket to boot.
Yeah, we definitely can't live without them. But, you know, they're going a little too far with trying to get you to have a refrigerator or a stove or a toaster have a computer in it.
Yeah, I agree. And lately, it's the thing you plug into your outlet, and then it sends signals through your electric wires to all the other appliances that have computers, so you can control the whole house kind of thing. I don't know. I never had any problem just going over and turning on a light myself.
There were some things I never want connected to a computer, and that would be, like, you see these ads on television for lock and unlock your front door with an app and turn your lights on. I'm sorry, but if you're that lazy, you get into the point of the children's cartoon Wall-E, where everybody's on a spaceship and everything's done for them. non-thinking. When something goes down, they wouldn't have a clue what to do.
No kidding. I think a useful thing would be, like with your car, where you could punch a button on your keys and unlock your front door when your hands are full. That would be pretty neat.
Yeah, but then again, you're leaving yourself open for, you know, somebody being able to hack that system. You know, there's always a way around it.
True enough. Hey, Charlie, in your shooting, are you into side-by-sides at all, the old-style shotguns or rifles?
You know, I don't have any drillings, side-by-side rifles. And I got rid of my last side-by-side shotgun many years ago. And, They're kind of nostalgic now.
We have a club here, a chapter of the Vintagers organization that is all about side-by-sides and shooting sporting clays and different things with the old side-by-side shotgun. It's a lot of fun. You know, I was going to invite you out if you were interested in that at all.
Well, of course, I don't have anything in that category. I think one of our club members belongs to that organization. Bill Hemmerlich, I believe his last name is.
He might belong to one of them. He doesn't belong to ours. But if he's interested in that sort of thing, we'd certainly like to make a connection with him because, you know, there's not that many of us around.
KD2KNH. Yeah, it is difficult because, I mean, a lot of things, like we have a bullseye shooting team, and, you know, that's been a dying sport for many years. As far as I'm concerned, it's like I'm amazed it's still around. But, yeah, these specialty niche groups, you know, it's tough. It just, there are so many options of things to do.